and welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and with me today co-hosting is my good buddy Mike Lidskin. Hello,
hey.
Mike. How are you?
Hey, Pam. Pam, great. How are you doing?
Yay, wonderful. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. I can't complain.
Yeah, really. Are you guys finally getting some spring there?
We are. Actually, it skipped spring and went into summer.
How about that?
You know how it is in Chicago.
I know. What do they always say? If you don't like the weather, wait a minute. That's the old saying there.
That's right. That's right. Most recently, one day it was, I think, 90 degrees, and then in the middle of the night it went down to like 34, 37. And then
wow.
The next day it was like a high of 45. So, yeah, wait a minute, and it'll definitely change.
That's amazing. So. That's Mother Nature doing mood swings.
Most definitely. So let's check the weather with our special guest today. We welcome award-winning singer-songwriter, guitarist, and music director, John Enghizer. Welcome, John.
Thank you. How are you?
You're
guys?
Welcome.
Hey, great. Nice to meet you, John.
And nice to meet you, too.
So how's your weather out your way?
It's actually raining as we speak. I guess you could say spring arrived in
yeah.
a way. We've had it's slowly but surely, but at least we're having a spring. We've been having some nice weather, and it's been kind of hovering between high 50s and low 70s. Like last year, I felt like it just went straight to summer, like you said. I don't think we even
right.
had a spring. So, I'm not complaining.
No, as long as it's not snow, I'm happy, you know?
That's a good way to look at it, right?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of snow, and of course I live in the wrong state to be saying that, so.
You sure do.
Illinois is
well,
kind of noted for snow, yeah.
Yeah. Someday I'm moving by you, Mike, I swear I am.
We don't get much snow here in Sacramento. I think last time we saw snow, I wasn't living here.
Oh, lucky you.
I know, huh?
You go at the right time.
Yep.
Well, John, we always like to start out the show with letting our listeners get to know a little bit about you, like your background. How did you get started into music, and who or what inspired you?
Okay. Well, let's see. I got to dig way back for that one. By the way, it just occurred to me, we've got the West Coast, Midwest, and East Coast all
yeah.
represented here. So that's good. It's good strategy.
And
on
you've
your part.
Been in all of them.
I have, for sure. Started Midwest, then West, and now East Coast. So getting to see the differences and similarities across the country. But in terms of when I started, actually was in Michigan, where I grew up. And excuse me. I never really was outwardly a singer, although I always felt like I could sing, and I was kind of a shy guy. But I picked up trombone and when I was 12, played for a few years, so I learned how to read and got very acclimated with music. But then when I was 17 in high school, there was a variety show, and I overheard some guys playing Led Zeppelin. And so I walked in and I said, "Hey, guys, sounds great. What are you doing?" "Oh yeah, we're going to audition for the variety show." I said, "Okay, cool. So who's your singer?" "We don't have one." I said,
"No.
Well, I'll sing for you." And they said, they looked at me like I had two heads, like, "You sing?" I go, yeah, I sing. So I said, "You got a mic?" And they're like, "Yeah, we do." And so I just started singing, and I think we were doing Over the Hills and Far Away. And that was a lot of fun. So they said, "Okay, cool, you're in." We did the audition, and then we ended up performing, and that was sort of how it all started. And then the rest is history. You know, I had a band throughout college and taught myself instruments along the way, mainly so I could write music, because I had all these song ideas and no way to, get them down on paper or get them recorded. So I figured I better get get to work on figuring out, you know, trying to master some tools in terms of getting my song ideas out. And especially considering I was involved with a lot of original material, you know, original bands writing songs over the years. So it was good to be able to, you know, give my two cents in terms of the songwriting process. And as the singer, I was looked upon to write most of the lyrics, and so that was something that was always a little daunting, but I always felt, you know, looking back at the lyrics that I write, I always thought that they were pretty good. And I was a bit of a perfectionist, have always been with the music and the lyrics, although I think the music comes more easily to me than the lyrics have.
What comes first, so, lyrics or music in your case?
Music probably 95% of the time comes first, and then I'll later put the words to it. And I think, although, you know, with this album, one night I sat down, this is, if you recall, I guess it was about 3 years ago when there was that silent march in Tehran when they had the vote stolen from them.
Yeah.
2 or 3 years ago. And I just was kind of ticked off. I'm watching the news. I was watching CNN. And I had a pad of paper and a pen, and I just started writing. Ended up writing about four or five, I guess you could say they were poems, that I later retooled as lyrics for songs. And two of the poems turned into lyrics for two songs on this album. So, you know, there are those times when I just write and it's just a stream of consciousness and it comes out. Whereas, you know, other times it's, okay, I've got this great song. Oh God, now I got to write lyrics for it. So I try to think of things that are interesting to me at that time or things that I'm feeling. And, you know, and then eventually it's usually something that comes to me when I least expect it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea for that song. And, you know, you can't just put any lyric to any song. It's got to fit the vibe. So, and I also, but what I'm noticing more and more is as I'm writing a song, you know, the melody will come to me and then certain words will come out. So it could just be the hook is a particular phrase, and at the time I'm not really sure what that phrase means, and then I give it some thought and I sort of like, oh yeah, okay, we can kind of go with that. So like there's a song on the album called Let's Get Out of Our Own Way, and I'm thinking these words are coming, why must we cheat, why must we lie, why, that was, I don't know where it came from. It just fit. It was just sort of phonetically kind of going into the song. And I thought, oh, okay, this is very much like the last relationship I was in.
Oh.
So when we were breaking up. So so it was, you know, towards the end when things weren't really working out. So so that's kind of how that happens. So sometimes they just sort of come out of thin air. And they're very, yeah.
Well, don't feel so bad. Yesterday I was chatting with a songwriter on the radio, and she told me that sometimes it's like 5 years between start of a song and not knowing what to do with it, and all of a sudden the idea hits her 5 years later. Okay, I found it. Now I know why I'm doing this song. It's just like the rest of the idea will just drop into her head later on.
I hope she wasn't actually working on it for 5 years.
No, she found other things to do in between. So it sounds like a lot of the songwriting you do comes from real-life experiences. Is it always the case, or do you get other ideas that are maybe not so autobiographical or not so current events-related?
It seems like it's kind of one or the other. I'd have to think about that. But, you know, I guess in some cases it's a lyric that, like I think of a couple of blues lyrics that I wrote that didn't really pertain to anything in general to my life, although looking at them, I've definitely experienced things. It's as my friend Amy once told me, she said, every lyric you write is about you, whether you know it or not. And I said, oh, okay, I never really thought of it that way. And so she said, yeah, it's somehow coming from you. Something influenced you in your life that you came up with this. So I think if I'm talking about current events or politics, that's less about me, but certainly it's about me in terms of my point of view. So, I'd have to give that some thought, but I think really it does come from it is basically, you know, what's happening in my life at the time, how I'm feeling about things, whether it's personal or political or social.
Interesting. That makes sense. Whatever you're dealing with would filter into the music. Now, a few minutes ago, we were talking about getting started, and aside from Led Zeppelin, who else would you consider among your musical influences?
It's vast, but I'll just start listing off some big ones, like Stevie Wonder, Earth, Wind & Fire, the progressive rock bands like Genesis and Yes, Steely Dan, and then moving forward, I guess I should say, bands like the Red Hot Chili Peppers and 24/7 Spies, Todd Rundgren, too many to list, The Police.
Yeah.
Great.
Grunge bands, Soundgarden, STP, Jamiroquai, 07, the list just goes on.
Now, in your music, I was listening to several of your tracks over the last day or so, and I heard some stylistic similarities to a wide range of musicians as well, maybe different than your list, but I heard in your music a little bit of Jack Johnson, Lenny Kravitz, and even a little bit of the band Chicago. Now, does that make sense, or am I just full of beans?
All great. No, it does. All great artists. I hear Lenny Kravitz a lot, actually.
Okay.
I get that comparison. And I get it, like when people say that, and I think that's such a great compliment because I think Kravitz is an amazing musician. And the similarities between us, too, is we're both multi-instrumentalists and we both write and perform and produce our own music. So it's not only stylistically similar, but just the way we approach things. So that might have something to do with it.
Hmm.
Really soulful guy he is. And then Jack Johnson, I could see that from – I actually haven't listened a lot of Jack Johnson, but I think, you know, the acoustic vibe and probably the vocal range and so forth, I could see the similarities there.
Yeah,
and
maybe on some of the songs where you have smoother vocals, that's kind of where I got that from.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And then Chicago love Chicago. They were a fantastic band. And with the horns and such, I could definitely see the comparisons there.
Well, with starting out in other bands and then starting your own band, is the music you play now different from the music you played with the other bands? And, like, how has it evolved?
Yes. So the music that I was playing, let me just take my first original, my first real original band, I guess I would say, when I was in my early 20s, called Jamiwocky. And it definitely was different because it's a four-piece writing group, so their ideas coming from four corners.
Mm.
And my ideas were only 25% of it, even though most of the lyrics were mine. But even then, my lyrics come from a different place now because I'm a different person than I was then. Not as much angst in the lyrics as there once was. It's funny, even in cases where I've written the songs from front to back, but I bring in other artists to perform the songs, and, you know, the song really evolves into something that might be different than my original vision, and it's usually better because, you know, I will tell you know, artists a lot of times with the guitars will say, well, what do you want me to play? And I'll say, I want you to play what you would play. You know, listen to the song, listen to the idea, and you come to me and you play it your way, and the bass player and everything too. And it usually comes, you know, usually something comes out of it that's even better than what I intended. Sometimes not, and then I have to get a little more controlling. But even then, it can be different. So the music for me, in terms of its evolvement, I think my style has gotten a little bit simpler. Maybe not as trying as hard as I once was, and just kind of letting the music come to me more. And I think that's probably that's probably consistent with my mentality in life. Is, you know, things have slowed down a little bit, and you know, let's just let life come to us and not try and force things in any one direction too much.
That's true, and sometimes simpler is best. Like, I absolutely love acoustic music. I love when a singer just sits down with a guitar and sings. To me, that shows their full talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as they say, less is more, right? So,
right.
and so much, I've always had a real sophisticated taste in music. So I, even when I'm being simple, I try to throw a twist in here and there to keep it interesting. That's just something I have to do. But there is something to be said about, you know, just a man and his guitar, or woman and her guitar. If you've got, simplicity is not as easy as it sounds, you know, to keep it simple and to make it good. Anyone can be simple, but to be simple and good is hard, I think.
That's true. That's true. I was wanting to let the listeners know about some of the awards and nominations that you received. You won the LA Music Awards Hot AC Album of the Year for Lost in the Pages in 2009. Music Connection named you as one of the Hot 100 Artists of 2012. And for 2013, you received two nominations from the Los Angeles Music Awards Hot AC Artist of the Year and Hot Album of the Year for your new album, Reality. And that's just awesome. Congratulations on all of that. You're welcome. What does getting recognition from your peers, the fans, and the music industry mean to you?
I guess it's better than just having your friends and family tell you you're good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's good to know that other people listen. I take it all with a grain of salt, and it's, you know, there are people that are going to gravitate to your music and respond to it, and then there are that won't. And it's nice to know that there are people in some areas of power that can help my career that actually do enjoy the music. So I'm grateful for that. It is helpful in terms of promoting my career and promoting my music. It's something that, you know, I look at for really just what it is, which is it's an award based on someone who noticed it and wanted to, wanted to let it be known, and works for an award organization or what have you. Music Connections, it's a prestigious magazine, and I thought that was really cool that they noticed me. And actually, they noticed me because of my LA Music Awards, so there was a domino effect there.
Nice.
There you go. There you go. That works. You know, get it out there with just one award or one nomination or one mention, and things can really take off from that point on.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'd like to go ahead and play Reality for our listeners so they can get an idea of what your music is like. Is that okay?
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
I want to be reality. Play with my friends on the TV. I wanna be, I wanna be reality. I wanna be your fantasy. I want you to wish you were me. I wanna be, I wanna be reality. In the world will be your mind. Everything will be just fine. When I face the camera on the show, all my worries fade away. Everything will be okay. When I face the camera on the show, you wish you never let me go.
Was Reality by John Enghauser. I'm sorry, I almost messed that up. I love that song. I love the lyrics and I love the music behind it. How many instruments did you play in that song?
Oh, gosh. I have to think about it. Acoustic guitar, electric guitar, hand percussion, and that was it on that one. I had my friend Eric Holden play bass, Dickie Fleazar played drums, and then the Rembrandt horns played the horns on that one. So
yeah.
Really, really well done by those guys.
Definitely.
Wow.
I
now,
love the horns and that.
Yeah. Now, that band that you use in the studio, do you play live gigs with the same folks?
No, that's a good question. I don't. The group that I had in San Francisco was actually a different group of guys, and my friend York Stoffel, who is my partner in crime and sound engineer, he and I we're friends with these guys. Actually, the bass player, I mentioned that band Jamowaki years ago that I was in. Eric played in that band, so I had always wanted him to play on one of my recent records, and he did in this case. Dickie's also a really good friend of York's who played on Lost in the Pages as well. He was so good, I asked him to come back. So when I was doing all my work in Los Angeles, And then, you know, I would work with these guys. And then back in San Francisco, I had my San Francisco band. So, which was also interesting because, you know, again, getting back to what I was talking about before, when you have a whole different group of guys assembled to perform certain songs, it comes out a little bit different. So when we perform the songs live, it's got a different vibe to it, but it's a cool vibe. Yeah. So it's different. And another thing is my friends who are playing with me that recorded on this album. Given the fact that I spent most of my time in San Francisco and they were in LA, made it difficult. But they were also they're touring artists, so they're. I could never get them for a long enough block of time to do any sort of mini tour. So I was just really, really grateful to have them available to perform on the albums when they did.
I could see that. Yeah, getting everybody in the same place all at once. So tell us a little bit about the title, Reality. Where did the name Reality come from for the song and the album?
Sure. So the song came first, and in terms of naming the album Reality, I was just I wanted to pick one of the titles that I thought just was a good album title. Reality, the song, is just it's a sort of satire, me poking fun of those on reality TV and those that aspire to be on reality TV.
Yeah.
And then the subplot being a guy who gets dumped by his girlfriend, and he thinks that if he gets on a reality TV show, he'll become famous, and then she'll regret ever dumping him. So, which is absurd, but that's really what it's about. So the irony is, reality is not about reality at all. But in terms of the album, I actually wanted to go with and. My girlfriend, we both liked this Fate I See, and I put it to a vote with some family members, and none of them picked that. So, and a couple, so there were some different ideas thrown my way, and they thought that the last title that I had, Lost in the Pages, was, okay, that was kind of your serious, provocative album title. I think you should keep it a little bit lighter this time. And I said, well, that's a good point. Or as one of my sisters said, yeah, this Fate I See is kind of a downer. So so I just said, you know, reality, you know, we talked about keeping it simple. So I said, that's very simple. We'll just go with that.
I like that. So did you record the album out here in California then? It sounds like you're in New York, but you came back for that, or had you not moved yet? How'd that all work?
I had not moved yet, so I got it all done, all the recording anyway, in California prior to moving to New York, and then I did the final mix while in New York. So the my mix engineer, who did the final mix for me, was in Los Angeles, and we were just communicating back and forth and sending files back and forth to get that done. And then I had a session. One session with him at his studio in Los Angeles that I flew out for to really just kind of get our ducks in a row. And I'm a real big perfectionist, and luckily Thor is too. So, you know, I would come back and say, you know, this still isn't right. This here, let's tweak this. Let's move this, what have you. Let's raise that fader here. And he was always just like, great, sure, yep. Got it done. You know, he was always on the same page as I am because he's also a perfectionist. So it always, you know, it worked out really great. And I was really lucky to get Thor, the mix engineer, to do this too. I wanted him on my prior album, but he's very high in demand. He does film scoring and works for Disney and TV, and it was a stroke of luck really that I found a week or two that he was available, that he was able to get it done, and he had been wanting to work with me too. So that worked out great.
So that's really good, and I think it's important to have that objective second set of ears to just do, you know, kind of be your gut check on a project like this.
No doubt about it. I completely agree with that, and same with yeah, working with Jorg and my sound engineer as I'm recording. There are times when you're not completely sure, or, you know, in my case, I quite often have more than one idea about something. Like the song We Hear Your Cry, it started as a completely different lyric, completely different melody, and we were in the studio getting ready to record it, and then just this other melody just popped into my head last minute, and I said, what do you think about this? And I started doing it, and he said, you know, I like it. He said, kind of work that out a little bit more. And then we ended up changing and went with that, and I'm so glad that we did. But there are times where he would have said, no, I'm not feeling it. Stick with what you got, you know. And if I'm really, you know, have a lot of conviction about one idea, and it's rare, but once in a while he'll say, you know, I think I would do it this way, and I'm saying, no, I really, really think this is the way to do it, and I'll stick to my guns. But there are many other times where I'm really kind of on the fence, and he's really good at tipping me one way or the other, and he's usually right.
Well, it's great that you have someone that you can, you know, count on their advice and be able to take it and go ahead and go along with what he's saying, because you know that it's going to work better.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, I think it's just better to have a team. Now, in terms of the songwriting, I always do that on my own. I've done a little bit of collaborating, did some collaborating with Eric, the bass player. We've been kind of working on some other songs on the side, which is something that, you know, I'm going to start doing some more of. It's just that the creative process for me is so personal that, you know, and it's just something that I do when I'm alone, or while I'm, you know, out and about. It's ideas are always popping in my head. But collaborating is fun, too, because you come up with some things that you never would have on your own.
Right, and thank God for all the iPhones and Androids out there, so that way when you are out somewhere, you can record it right that second, or, you know, talk about the lyrics that pop into your head.
Exactly, yeah, it's lyrics or just song ideas. You know, I'll just hum out or tap out some ideas right into the microphone on my phone, and it would probably be gibberish to you guys, but you know, I know what I was getting at, and I can go back and all right, work that out on the keyboard or the guitar or what have you, and you know, sometimes you can't really get the original vibe that you were going for, but in most cases I can, and you're right, it's very convenient. I used to have to kind of rush home. You know, you always have a little. I always used to have like a little cassette recording device or a little digital player, but I didn't always have it with me. And so the phone has been, the smartphone has definitely been a godsend in that regard.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they have so many of those things in the car these days that you can record or talk from or call your house or, you know, that helps too, I'm sure.
It does.
Well, I'd like to go ahead and play another song from your new album, and that is Tower for our listeners.
Oh, my sister.
It's one of my favorites.
It's my sister's favorite, too.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Her and I have similar tastes then. All right,
yes.
So here is
You'll
Tower.
You'll have to go see a concert together.
Yeah, that works for me. All right, I'm going to go ahead and play it.
Thank you.
such a beautiful song. I absolutely love everything about it. And when I first listened to it, I didn't think there was going to be lyrics because it has such a long music introduction. How did you decide to do this song that way?
Well, thank you for saying it was beautiful. It's part two. There's Tower Part One and Tower Part Two. So it's the second part of basically an anthem. I hate to say anthem because it sounds such a dated term, but that's really kind of what it is. So part one was really about 9/11. I'd written it quite a while ago, and I'd never recorded it. But the song idea had changed quite a bit. But I kept the lyric because I liked it so much. And then part two was really just, it was a musical idea that I had that I thought was a great extension of part one. And then as it was going, I thought, you know, a lot of times when we have that dilemma as songwriters, it's like, okay, that's a great intro or a great verse, but now we got to come up with a chorus and a bridge and such. And I said, you know, I just really like how this progression builds, you know, just keep it, start low and then build. And then as I'm building it, layer parts and, you know, the horn parts, the melodies came to me. And I'd start with one melody and then the harmony above that with the French horns and then the trombone and then the strings on top of that. So it just all sort of started to build as I was, it was like building a song, you know, that was part of the creative process. And it just evolved into this thing. And I thought, you know, the lyric from Tower was so poignant but, you know, really intense. And I wanted to finish the thought with something more uplifting in that, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time in this world as we can see. And so let's give what we can and let's take advantage of what we can
because that's true.
So that's where the lyric came in at the end, and I just felt like it's just a very powerful, uplifting feeling that lyric was appropriate in that spot at the end.
It is. It smolders for a while, and then it just lifts you up at the end. And that vocal, that's probably why I thought that I heard a little bit of Lenny Kravitz in your music. The vocal reminds me of him there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And to me, the music, that's where I heard your inspiration with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. That's they were my first love, actually, as a kid, was Earth, Wind, and Fire. I got really bought everything that they ever did. I actually recently saw Verdeen White, the bass player of Earth, Wind, and Fire, at in LAX airport. And I don't know if you know who he is or if you've ever seen the band, but he's the guy he's late 50s, man. He's got to be in his 60s now. And he's got the long black hair. And he has got energy of an 18-year-old. He's unbelievable. I mean, and they have hired.
He needs to share that.
Yes.
Oh, he's just his energy is unreal. And, you know, the other band members talk about it. Like, they said, you know, we probably wouldn't tour anymore if it weren't for him. He just energizes the band. But I saw him standing in the airport talking to somebody. And, you know, in Los Angeles, you see celebrities all the time. I see him in New York all the time. This is where they live, so I leave him alone. I don't ever approach him. But in this case, it's like, oh, I've got to go talk to him.
Yeah.
So I just went up to him. And I introduced myself. I said I was a big fan my whole life, shook his hand, and I really don't remember a word I said. I just shook his hand and looked at him and spewed out a bunch of stuff about inspiration and this, you know, and you know, what he and the band have done for me over the years. And he just looked back and he just thanked me. And he said, well, thank you very much. It's really, really kind of you. And he's just very gracious. And that was it. And I walked away. So, yeah, anyway, you brought that up, so I thought
yeah.
I'd mention that.
No, that's a good story, because I can picture myself doing the same thing of some of the people that I met that I have, you know, been a fan of for a long time. And after I'm done having a conversation, whether it be for, you know, 2 seconds or for 5 minutes, I thought, oh, my God, I hope I made sense. I know. And whoever's with me, I'll say, did I just, you know, blubber on like an idiot, or did I sound okay?
No. And, John, you know, what happened there, that's going to instruct you how to handle it when somebody stops you in the airport in the future. Somebody's undoubtedly
right.
going to do that to you.
I doubt it, but.
No.
Never know. Come on.
Oh, no. Yeah, maybe. No, but you know, but you make a good point. You know, I've had people come up to me after a show, and I used to be quite embarrassed by that. Actually, I didn't take compliments very well after shows, especially when I would be so, you know, I would be really hard on myself after shows because, oh, you know, I made this mistake or I made that mistake. And I've kind of gotten over that because we're all human. But
right.
Now I just sort of enjoy it and think to myself, hey, you know, what a great thing that this person came up and said all these nice things and that they really enjoyed it and that I could give them something that they can take away. You know, it's just a really, really great thing, and it makes me feel good. And so it's kind of a different feeling that I get now from it in a positive sense.
Well, just to let you know, as a fan of music or a fan of a musician or a band, when we sit there and listen to you guys play, we can't tell when you're making a mistake, unless it's a mistake on a lyric. You know, you are the ones that know how it should go, and we just enjoy listening to it, so we don't even pay attention to that.
Right. Yeah, and I know that, and you know, we've heard it so many times, and a lot of times it seems like a lot of people kind of listen with their eyes too, and so
mm-hmm.
if you're up there and you know, as we say in the, as we the musicians say in the rock band world, if you make a mistake, make it again, make it twice,
yeah.
You know, then they'll think it was meant to happen,
right.
Right. It's a new version constructed just for this particular audience.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right, this is the new extended mix version that we're playing just for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, your music is being played in 13 countries, which is so awesome. Will you be touring with the new music?
Not right away. I'm going to take a little bit of time, get the release out there, get the word out, and I'll need to assemble a new group too. So right now I'm playing with some guys, but it's not actually has nothing to do with my music.
Mm-hmm.
Really just trying to get the network going in New York, and believe me, there is no shortage of talent here. So
when I
have the right people in place with the, you know, that I have developed some relationships with, then yeah, we'll definitely be doing that at some point.
Have you played in other countries yet?
Not that have booked me.
No.
I've had cases where you know, I've a couple guys with some guitars that have sat on some street corners. It's been a long time since I've done this. But no, I have not booked anything abroad. I considered Australia with the release of Lost in the Pages because I was getting a lot of radio play there, but it
mm-hmm.
just didn't, in talking things over with my promotion company, it just didn't make financial sense to do it, so we decided to bag it, but it was something we considered, and maybe this go around.
And as you can tell, music is universal because playing in different countries means different languages, and it doesn't matter what language they speak. If the music is good for them, they're going to listen and love it.
Oh, you got that right. Have you ever seen those Michael Jackson videos from when he'd play in Japan, and you'd see the Japanese who didn't know a word of English, but they were mouthing every single word to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And speaking of different countries, you know, I've got a lot of listeners and friends in other countries, and so they're amazed at how big the U.S. is because, you know, the U.S. is basically the size of Europe, and they do have some regional differences. You've moved around quite a bit yourself, and your moves were not trivial ones. The Midwest, California, different parts of California, and now New York City, and these are all very, very different places. It's like a whole cultural change with each move, not just a location change. So how have these moves affected you and your perspective, and then ultimately any effect on your music?
Well, the moves for me, putting music aside, were great because I'm the type of guy that has a hard time staying put. I've always loved to travel abroad and and learn new cultures, but just there's such a curiosity that I have that I just have to go see how other people live and experience it firsthand. So to go from and it was such a good learning experience for me, you know, to come from the Midwest and then live in California, which is so different than the Midwest, but so many Midwesterners live there because
right.
It's such a transient, especially the Bay Area is so transient. But just a different way of thinking and, you know, maybe different than ways I had been taught grown up and experienced grown up, and making a lot of friends that sort of have different ideals than a lot of the friends that I grew up with. And then coming to New York, which, you know, New York has its similarities to San Francisco and California in that, you know, it is a big city and it's progressive and in its thinking, but it also has an edge to it that California doesn't have, and a humor to it. It definitely is different no matter what part of the country that you live in. And you bring up a good point, you know, when I meet people abroad, it's like, oh, I want to come to America, where should I go? And I don't even know where to start because, as you said, it's very big and you're going to get a completely different experience if you go to Manhattan versus going to Disney World in Orlando, you know.
Yeah.
So which that obviously wouldn't be the first place that I would tell someone. But even Los Angeles is so different than San Francisco. I mean, there are some similar California attitudes, but it's, you know, L.A. is such a weird place. And I mean, I had a great experience in L.A., but it's not a city. It's just like this enormous suburb, and you
really
got to find your way.
It really is, absolutely. And I guess to answer the question, if somebody said, "Where should I go in the U.S.?" I would just say everywhere.
Yeah, but you know, you and I haven't even been everywhere, have we?
No, not even close.
So I haven't been to the Grand Canyon yet. So, I've been to Troco Gorge in Taiwan, but I've never been to the Grand Canyon in the U.S., and I think, gosh, it's about time I started exploring my backyard more.
Right.
You know? So.
Yeah. So of all the places you've been, does any place perhaps resonate with you more closely than all the others?
You mean the places I've lived in the U.S.?
Yeah, does one place just really grab you as, this is home, this is me?
Well, I guess not. You know, I love San Francisco, and I love my friends there, and I miss them. But, I always felt like I was far from home because my family lives in the Midwest and on the East Coast, And, you know, with a big time change, I always felt like it was a transient. Even though I spent all those years in California, I think it's just because my roots were so far away that I just, it never really felt like home. Although I, you know, like I said, I did love it, and who knows, I could end up back there. And in New York, I just got here too, so, you know, it's been a year and a half. I have some family here, which is good, and it's a little bit closer to where I'm from. Yeah, it's the East Coast, it's a little bit different mentality, but I guess it feels closer to home.
Hmm.
But it's a little early to say if I can call it home yet. So
yeah.
There's not, I wouldn't say there's one place that it's like, oh my God, I've died and gone to heaven. I think it's just, it's not in my personality. There's always that curiosity about the next place. However, I don't know if there are that many cities left in the country that it's like, oh, I have to go live there and experience it. I mean, I know, Pam, you live in Chicago. That's a wonderful mm-hmm. city. I grew up 3 hours from Chicago. And so I know a lot about it. I haven't actually lived there. But, you know, that's, I have a couple sisters that live in Chicago. So...
Wow.
That is, yeah. I mean they're Midwesterners to the core. So
yeah,
they I don't think they'd live anywhere else.
Well, if it was up to me, I'd do a lot more traveling. Maybe I was born a Midwesterner, but I love to travel and I'd like to get to a lot of different places within the U.S. and outside of the U.S. I have been to 26 different states, and the only other country I've been to is Mexico. So that's about mm-hmm. it. So there's a lot more yet that I need to see and want to see. So hopefully one day I'll be able to do that.
Oh, you will.
Oh,
and Mexico
on my
is great.
My bucket list. You mentioned Australia. That's one of the places I'd like to go. But my main goal outside the U.S. is to go to England because I have friends out there. And Mike, you know the bands that are out there that we help support, the indie bands, and I'd love to meet all those guys in person. So,
well, I have a distribution. I have a label that I work with in Sydney, Australia, called Blue Pie, and believe it or not, I have yet to go visit them. I have not been to Australia. I was mm-hmm. in Southeast Asia a few years, maybe about 2 years ago, after I signed the deal with them, and I thought, well, while I'm here, I'm just gonna shoot over to Australia. Well, it's 12 hours away.
Oh.
Where I was, I thought, oh yeah, you know, I'll be right by Australia. I'll just take a puddle jumper on over, and we'll be good. And not the case. A lot of space there
yeah.
that I wasn't.
Well, that was still 12 hours less than if you were going from here. So.
That's right.
That's
you
true.
Were closer.
I was halfway there.
Yes.
I was halfway there. Yeah.
Well, is there someone you would like to work with in the music industry, whether it's another singer or a producer?
It would definitely be an artist that I'd want to work with over a producer. Although working with there are a lot of great producers. I could die tomorrow with a smile on my face. But I would say it would definitely, if I could just perform with, oh my God, if I could perform with Earth, Wind & Fire or Peter Gabriel or or Genesis or one of those great bands or collaborate with them. Would just be unbelievable. You know, I actually just met the guys from 24/7 Spies, Jimmy Hazel.
Hello.
I don't know if you know who those guys are, but they got their notoriety in the mid '90s, and they're kind of a funkier, heavier version of Living Color. And really, when I heard these guys. They were a big influence on me at that time, and I was in Jamiwaki, so I was writing a lot of funk rock, and they're so soulful and edgy and just all of the things, aspects of music that I love. And but they, you know, they didn't they have cult status. They never really made it big. They're from the New York area. So turns out this drummer I've been playing with is friends with the bass player of 24/7 Spies. So we went and saw them perform, and I met the guys in the band, really sweet guys. And it occurred to me that I thought, hey, you know what, maybe on my next album, since I have a friend that knows these guys, maybe they'd be willing to do something with me in the studio. Who knows? So it's just an idea I've been kicking around.
That's how those things happen, though. Do it. That's how they come together.
True. Yeah. It really would be a dream come true.
And
so,
it doesn't hurt to ask. All you can get is a no, and you're still at the same place you were before.
That's right. So, yeah, so just you mentioned that, and that came to mind. So that could be a possibility, but we'll see.
We have to send the podcast to them. Let them hear that.
Yeah, that would be good.
Now, I wanted to touch on a little bit of the other things that you've done, which is you were the music director and contributing songwriter for indie films, Urban Relics and When It Rains. How did you get those projects, and what was it like making music for films versus an album?
That, I'll start with Urban Relics. So that was a film, and talk about someone making their dreams come true. This was a guy who had a little bit of money, and he'd always dreamed of writing and directing a film. So this was about the time that indie films were hot, right? Because a couple indie films had just won awards, and it was right around the time that the Sundance Film Festival had just gotten started. And so he had this wise guy, this wise guy film he wanted to make. He had written the script, and so he hired a friend of mine who is actually in Los Angeles now to be in the film. And so the director was talking to my friend Tom and said, yeah, I'm looking for some original music. So Tom said, hey, he told me the deal. He said, looking for some original music. Why don't you talk to him? So I spoke with him, and I asked him what he was looking for. And he said that, I really like 50s music, like 50s acapella, that sort of thing. I think it would be great. It would really just kind of fill out this vibe, because it's a wise guy film. So these, Italian mafia wannabes, but it's a comedy. It was a comedy, so it was just more of a lighthearted film. And so I said, well, that sounds great. I can send you some things. And, you know, at the time I was a really young guy, so he kind of looked at me like, well, you weren't even alive in the 50s. How would you know what a 50s song sounds like?
Right.
So I said, well, give me some. He said, you know, Under the Boardwalk by the Drifters? I said, I sure do. He said, something like that would be great. So this was a time when, you know, rather than writing like an organically written song straight from me, this was kind of having to take somebody's idea. So I just kind of turned it backwards and leftwards and came up with this song called Dance in the Rain. And it had that sort of Under the Boardwalk vibe to it. And I found a producer to work with, and Linda Chase. She's an amazing musician that collaborated with me, and she contributed some songs. I contributed some songs, recorded together, and we did some acapella stuff and some, you know, 50s sounding, which was a great time, like great time of innocence for music, and R&B was evolving, and so we submitted the songs. He loved it. Couldn't have been happier. And then the soundtrack was just a series of these songs. And everyone just raved about the soundtrack. Now, the movie itself never got released. But they went to I shouldn't say it didn't get released. They went to Sundance. It didn't win any awards. It was a first-time low-budget film, but they had some decent-name actors in there because, you know, at the time, a lot of the big-name actors were getting in on some of the indie film, or B
mm-hmm,
actors were
yeah.
getting in on some indie film because they thought, oh, this might be the one that makes it big, right? So, but anyway, great learning experience. When It Rains was shortly thereafter, and, you know, at the time, I thought, well, I could really make a career as a music supervisor after this, if that's something I wanted to do, given this experience. But I decided mm-hmm. to stick with being an artist.
Well, you have it on your resume now, so you never know who's going to reach out to you about that. So just keep it in the back of your mind that someday you may have to do it again.
That's right.
And it might not be an indie project. It might be, you know, a full-fledged well-known name film.
Never know.
So I wanted to play the song Black Jacket for our listeners before we close. But before that, I also would like to let our listeners know where to get your music and how to stay in touch with you. Now, I noticed that you're on Twitter, but when I looked, it's been like 711 days since you tweeted, if that's really you.
That's really me. Yeah, don't tweet at me. I'm not tweeting anymore. I'm off tweeting. So, yeah. So
did you go through a 12-step program for it, or you just don't quit?
you know, it's funny. I was having some, I remember having some password issues with it or something, and I couldn't get in, and I just was like, oh, heck with it. I don't like tweeting anyway. So, it wasn't a 12-step program. It was pretty much just a one-step program. Other ways they can reach me, they certainly can go to my website, which is johnenghauser.com, which does need some updating, but my label will be doing that very shortly, but they certainly can access ways to contact me. So that's johnenghauser.com. And then they can find my music, they can find Reality on CD Baby and iTunes and Amazon, as well as Spotify and Rhapsody. And some of the tracks should also be on my Pandora station soon.
Nice.
Oh, cool. I'll have to put that in because I listen to Pandora, too, besides Spotify. And I noticed also on your website that you have ringtones.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and there are ringtones. So go ahead and download a ringtone.
That's
cool.
I love doing that.
I did it just to see if it would work. I was I downloaded the song Cognition Incorporated from Lost in the Pages. So it starts off with this guitar vocal duet scat, and so every time the phone rang, I had to hear myself doing this, and over and over. And you know, sometimes people call that you really aren't in the mood to talk to, and you're mm-hmm. hearing this song as you're seeing the name of that person talking, and it's like, I don't need any negative associations with my song. I'm just gonna. I'm gonna turn this off. So I decided that wasn't a good idea for me. Anyway,
yeah, that's funny. You're also on Facebook too. Do you have? But it's a personal page. Do you have a band page or a musician page?
I do. I don't actually use it. But thank you for bringing that up. I decided to keep that just for personal use.
Okay.
I have a MySpace page too. Which actually
mm-hmm.
still has a lot of friends that I think MySpace is just sort of, I think it's seen its day. So really I just kind of direct people to my website,
mm-hmm.
or they could also email me if they wanted to at my Gmail account, which is jenghauser1@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to close the show then with Black Dress. And do you have anything you want to say about it before we let you go?
Well, Black Dress is lyrically is a little bit different thing for me. Actually, this answers one of your questions, I think, that you had earlier, Mike. This is a little bit of a departure from the personal love interest to, well, I guess this does include a love interest, but sort of more emotional, or this is less emotional, but, you know, talking about me writing about emotion and current events and so forth, this is really more of a seductive lyric, and it was an idea that I have to give credit to my ex-girlfriend for, because she was wearing this black dress, which she looked great in, and I made some comment about it, and she said, you should write a song about this, and I said, okay, well, I'm going to write a song then about not about her, but about the black dress and how the black dress is this fortress between me and what I want.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. You can find inspiration from anything. My gosh, that's wonderful. Well, we'd like to thank you so much for joining us today, and keep in touch, you know, if you go on tour and anything else, if you have new music, you know, we'd welcome you back at any time.
Yep.
Thank you both so much. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you, John.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay, and for our listeners, here is Black Dress. great song, Black Dress by John Enghauser. What do you think, Mike? That's pretty different from the other two songs we listened to.
Yeah, I like it. He's got a wide range in his musical palette, and that one really, really rocks. I'm really liking the choruses, the black dress part, yeah.
Right? I know. I do, too. That's what caught me on that. Well, for our listeners, be sure to check out his website at John Enghauser. Why do I want to say Enghauser? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of Budweiser. Is it time for a beer?
I'm about ready for one of those myself, yes. 5 o'clock somewhere.
JohnEnghauser.com. He also has links on there that'll take you straight to where you can purchase his new album Reality at iTunes and Amazon and so forth. So check it out and go ahead and purchase it. We'll be back again on May 21st at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time with Lorenzo Lamas. Many
wow.
of you may know him from, Falcon Crest or Renegade, which was another favorite of mine. And also, he played on The Bold and the Beautiful. And, Mike, you know I'm a soap person, so
I definitely
loved him on The Bold and the Beautiful. But he's also calling in to chat about his new benefit that he has going. It's called Ride to the Dunes for Child Abuse Awareness, and he's actually going to be the Grand Marshal for it, and that'll be held on Sunday, June 2nd. So it'll be a very interesting conversation, and I give him a lot of kudos for doing that and giving back, and especially for child abuse awareness. My gosh, that's
major.
Huge. That's
major
huge.
Kudos. What a good thing to do. Sounds like a good man. Can't wait to hear your interview with him.
Oh, thank you. And also for our listeners, be sure to tune in to Twirl Radio because that's Mike's gig. Would you like to let them know about that?
Yeah, a little plug. Thank you, Pam. Yes, Saturdays, 4 to 6 p.m., Twirl Radio. It's twirlradio.com, and I play a bunch of great indie music, a few well-known but oddball tracks, and I've been doing this for over 15 years, and we're about to hit show number 600 on, June 29th. Yeah, we're going to do some kind of celebration. I'm going to expand it to 3 hours, and I've got two or three interviews lined up, one with somebody who's really well-known who I'm not quite at liberty to say yet, but it's a pretty cool thing if I can get her. I just gave away which gender.
Yeah, how many hers are there in the world?
Yeah, I know, right. I just narrowed down the 7 billion people down to about 3.5 billion, but we'll just say it's somebody that I've played a lot on my show, and I may get the chance to interview this person. So, yes, a lot of good stuff coming up. I've got interviews. Some artists that are coming up in the near future are Lisa Michaels. She's just put out she's about to release a new album. She put out a couple singles from it, so that's coming up. And I'll probably interview a band called The Tuesday Club from the UK. They are some friends of mine who I used to do radio with over at Recharge Radio, and they decided to create this 8-piece band, and they're just wonderful too. So a lot of good interviews coming up.
And I love speaking to people in the UK. I don't know, something draws me to their music, and it's different, but yet, you know, you do hear that type of music here in the U.S. and I really don't know what does that, but I tend to be drawn a lot to the UK bands.
Well, I think the influences go back and forth. I think a lot of them, and this is what Larry Knight was telling us a few weeks ago, that a lot of British bands back in the day were influenced by American blues, and now a lot of American bands are influenced by the British bands, and it keeps going back and forth. So I think it's a cross-ocean pollination.
That could be it.
Yeah,
plus, I love when I talk to them and hear their accents.
Yep, I love that too. I absolutely love it.
And speaking of accents, the one time that you were interviewing Maxie Dunn, I did not expect her to sound like that at all.
She sounded
like Irish or something, I remember thinking at the time.
Yeah, and she said, there's a lot of us throwback Irish here in Liverpool. A lot of people say that about her accent, and it's funny because Joe Algieri, who was listening in Australia, said, wow, I love her accent. And I laughed because he's got a different accent of his own. And I just responded by saying, what accent? I don't even hear it. So honestly, she's a friend. I've talked to her so many times, I really don't hear it anymore. That's what's kind of fun about that. I don't even hear an accent with her because I've talked to her so many times and we're just used to each other. And I'm assuming she probably feels the same way about my accent too. And, of course, I don't have one because I'm
right.
Here.
Right.
So
to me, you don't sound like you do. I mean, I've had relatives that have moved from the Midwest to California, and when I speak to them, they have an accent. They have that Californian accent. But to me, you don't have it as much.
Dude, totally.
You're not too close to the valley, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, yet I grew up there, so, you know, go figure.
Yeah, that's funny. So Twirl Radio on Saturdays, 4 to 6 p.m., and that is Pacific time, just so you're aware, because I always have to figure that out in my head, being here in Chicago.
That's true, 6 p.m. Central time and 7 p.m. Eastern, yes.
Right. Yeah, it gets confusing at times, and then especially when you're dealing with somebody overseas, then you have to figure that out as well.
The best
so
one
I
is
try,
Joelle
I just
Giri.
Always try to put the Eastern time down, like when I put something on my website, and let people figure it out from
yes.
there.
Yes. There's an app for that, and then Joelle Giri in Perth, Western Australia, comes in and listens on Sunday morning sometimes, and he'll say in the middle of my show he's making breakfast for the kids, and that's just wild because Sunday's already started for him, and it's still Saturday afternoon when my show's on.
Right. I know.
It's a big,
I know.
Big
I have
here.
A lot of friends, too, around the world, and they'll tell me morning or afternoon a lot of times, and here it's nighttime, and the next day is what really gets me.
Hard
you
to
know,
keep track
they're already
of
on the next day in Australia when you're doing something the day of.
Oh, so true.
So anyways, also for our listeners, be sure to follow this show on Twitter at Take Two Radio. Check out my website at take2radio.com. Follow us on Blog Talk. They'll send you an email each and every time we have a guest scheduled so you don't miss anybody you want to listen to. And then please do call in when we have a guest. I know a lot of people are very shy and don't know what to say to the guests, but they're all down to earth, as you can tell, when Mike and I speak with them. It's, you know, they're just like you and I. They just do something different for a living. Also, you can listen to the podcasts from my website. You can listen to them on iTunes. And now we are on Stitcher. And Stitcher can be downloaded to your mobile devices. It's an app, and it's free to listen to it there. We just hooked up with them. So we got a couple different places. There's no reason you can't listen to a podcast if you want to these days.
So hello, Stitcher people. Good to meet you.
Yeah, definitely. And the best part, of course, is, you know, it's free, so you can't complain about that.
Absolutely.
Also, I have my other show, Take Two Radio Music, and we support indie artists there. And I do have some upcoming interviews. On May 20th, I have Trevor Davis, who was recently a contestant on The Voice, and he'll be with us at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Excuse me. On May 22nd, I have a Canadian rock band called Afterglow, and they will also be with us at 3 p.m. Eastern. And then on May 24th, speaking of the UK, we have Last Breath, and
hey
they
now.
Will be with us at 3 p.m. Eastern time, which is 8 p.m. UK time. So join us if you'd like to. We're on Blog Talk. Just type in Take Two Radio Music, and it'll pull right up for you. You can also go to that website, which is take2radiomusic.com. Follow us on Twitter at Take Two Radio Music. So everything is with the number two. I like to try to keep it simple, and that's why everything
yes.
is like named the same. You know.
Yes. And you are all over the place. You are very contactable, very listenable,
yeah.
too.
Thanks. I'm glad you said that, so that way I know I'm doing the right thing.
Yes.
And I want to thank you, Mike, for joining me. It's been a pleasure as always, and I always love your input and questions to our guests.
Well, thanks. It's always a pleasure hanging with you on the radio, too. This has been a lot of fun as always, and I cannot wait till we do this again. I know it's coming up soon.
Yeah, June we have something coming up, but we'll wait to announce that in a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, take care. Have a wonderful day. That goes to all of our listeners. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Be blessed, and we'll chat again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.